Welcome to the Public Handicapper Podcast. This podcast covers the biggest weekend stakes run around the country. This is show number 44, December 20th, 2019. I'm Scott Carson, founder of Public Handicapper, and I'm joined by my co-host, Hall of Fame handicapper, Chris Larmy. Chris, how's the left coast today?
It's wet, but warmer than it has been recently. In fact, it might hit 60 degrees today, so I'm looking forward to a little balmy, wet weather.
We're dealing with a cold snap here, so cold that Aqueduct had to cancel yesterday. And I've got trees with ice on them. There's so much ice on the trees that they're hanging down into the driveway, and I had to lop off branches so that I could drive through.
Well, that sounds like the sort of weather that can lead to lots of downed power line. So hopefully you'll keep the power going up there.
You know, it's a miracle that we didn't lose power, because we lose it about once a week in the winter. So where I live anyway. And we have a special guest today. He was one of the major players on the TV show Horse Players. He won the NHC in 2012. He is the only winner of over 1 million in the NHC. He is Michael Baychok. Michael, how are you this morning?
I'm great. I'm really appreciative to be on the show. I'm a loyal listener, and I get a lot of good nuggets from both of you guys and your guests. And hopefully I'm able to follow in that stellar handicapping prowess and give out a few nuggets for the fairgrounds tomorrow.
Excellent. Michael, I had just a couple of questions for you, which you've probably received in some other interviews, but our listeners may not have heard them. So the first question is, when did you start playing the horses?
I started playing the horses when I was 13 years old, which is 43 years ago. My first trip to the track was to the fairgrounds, so it holds a special place in my heart. I'm about an hour away, but I go, you know, when I can, a couple times a week, hopefully. So yeah, 43 years ago, which for me to say that, it boggles my mind that I've been beating my head against this wall that is horse race handicapping for that long and still have some marbles that can shake loose.
That's great. Did your father bring you, or any other, who brought you to the track?
Well, that's kind of a funny story. Yeah, so the first person that brought me to the track was James Carville. He worked for my father as a lawyer, but he didn't do a lot of lawyering. He was doing a lot of politicking. Shocking, that's the road he chose. And so on one Saturday, he was assigned as part of his duties for working to, quote unquote, babysit me for the day as my dad was working for work. And so he told my dad, hey, look, I'm going to the track with my buddies. I think James must have been 30-ish at that point, 30. And my dad said, fine, take him. And so he did. And the rest, I guess, is kind of history. I teased James for years. You know, I used to cuss him kind of for introducing me to the track, because it can be a curse at times. You know, there's a lot of joy there. But, you know, after I won the NHC, he was one of the first people that called me. And, you know, I was joking about the curse, but I thanked him for introducing me to the great sport of horse racing. And we still go to the track today. I mean, we might end up there next week together.
Awesome. And what is your main angle for handicapping? Like, what are you, a racing form guy? Do you use any special tools?
I've tended, you know, when I won the NHC, I heavily relied on Thoragraph. I've gotten a little bit away from it, although I might be coming back to it. But I tend to just use BristNet. I like their pace figures that they added a few years ago. I think their speed figures are, you know, not as widely distributed as others. So they have some sort of intrinsic value because, you know, that's information other people aren't using. That's probably the basis of my handicap. Now, for maiden races, especially two-year-olds and three-year-olds, first-time starters, I do rely heavily on pedigree, trainer angles for those races, and also, you know, how the dam has performed if she raced in her racing career and how her foals have performed.
All right. Well, we have to let listeners know that this is a historic podcast. Back in 2012, Chris and his partner, Dave Flansbaum, were leading the NHC going into the last race. And I was sitting at the table with Chris and Dave. Michael was in second. The top prize was $1 million. And I remember handicapping the race. And if I had been asked my advice, I would have selected the horse that Chris chose. Michael took what I think was the favorite at about 5-2. And Michael's horse just got up to win the $1 million prize and relegate Chris and Dave to the $150,000 second prize. That was nearly 8 years ago. How do each of you guys feel about that experience at this time in your lives? How does it affect you? How do you think of it?
Chris, you go first.
Well, it was a tough beat. I mean, obviously it was the toughest beat in handicapping contest history. So it was disappointing in a way, but you know, that's the way it goes. It didn't really bother me that much. And I look back at it, you know, a little bit bittersweet, but I don't really have any real negative thoughts. It was a lot of fun. It was a fun weekend. Dave and I had a great time. I really wish that Dave had won. I felt more for Dave than I did for myself. But it was exciting, and I congratulate, you know, Michael. He earned it. He got that last race. It's even a little closer than it sounds, because the horse really was 5-2. And if it had went off at 5-2, I don't think he would have won. He only won by a dollar, but it clicked up, I think, to 3-1 right as they were loading, and the rest is history. So I'm not sure what I'm sure Michael has some fond memories about that day.
Well, it was clearly a day that changed my life, a race that changed my life. I didn't know, Chris, that you were involved in Dave's entry or action. That's the first I'm hearing of it. I mean, I met Dave a couple of years later at the Breeders' Cup and basically offered my condolences. I mean, I didn't, you know, it was a bad beat, but course was nothing really personal. Chris is right in that, you know, the decision was simply taking the horse that first, I think, had the fastest thoroughgraph, but also had to have the right odds. And the horse did click down, and I did start walking back to the machine to change the bet. And then I just stopped myself from doing that, or somebody else tackled me from doing that. So yeah, a lot of things had to go right all weekend long, and everything went right. As you know, Chris and Scott, I mean, when you're in, you know, against 400 or 500 people or entries, basically everything has to go right in your way. You have to win all the photos, and you know, your horses can't get bad trips, and everything went right that weekend. And I think, you know, there's a lot of other people that could have won it. There's a lot of other better handicappers than me, obviously. But I was just the luckiest and happened to have some good horses that weekend. So, I mean, it definitely changed my whole outlook, certainly a little financially, but also just how I'm involved in the horse racing space to this day.
Well, Ross Gallo likes to say that the stars have to align in just the right way to win the NHC. So they did align for you that weekend, and congratulations for having achieved that. It's something that we uh, we we dream about. We all dream, you know, anybody who's a handicapper dreams about winning the NHC and all that comes with it. So, congratulations. And, how do you feel now? Are you like, I got to do it again? Or are you, you know,
yes. You think,
yeah. Are you completely obsessed?
I got a lot less obsessed right after, and my handicapping suffered, and my, you know, I didn't even qualify like the year after that you get the automatic, I think. And then I came back and I had a really good performance the next year. You know, yes, I'm upset. I think I'm semi-obsessed about it. I still dream about it, you know, so there's that. But I'm a little more protective of the contest that I'm entering. And I don't really want to get into this, but, you know, I don't play hardly at all online anymore. So it's very difficult for me to qualify because I don't really travel because of the job most of the year. So it's going to be hard for me to qualify this year. I'm not qualified. Of course, I want to. I mean, it's just the greatest experience for a handicapper contest player that we have. And if I don't, I'm going to be extremely disappointed. A little bit sad, but I'm going to be, you know, just more protective of my money and where I spend it in order to qualify. But I sure wish I'm hoping tomorrow at the fairgrounds that I'm lucky enough that the stars do align and I'm able to qualify tomorrow.
So you'll be in that super qualifier.
That's right.
That should be a good contest. Yeah, that should be a real good opportunity for you. Your home track, quite a few NHC seats up for grabs. What's the exact format that they're using for that, Michael?
It's I qualified there last year, and it's an interesting format. I don't know that anybody else uses it. So it's $1,000 of live money, and it will be seven bets of $50 to win in place. So that's a little twist on the live money aspect. And then this is kind of a new twist. There's one bet of 150 win place for each entry. So you basically have a triple bet, and then you have seven $50 win place bets. You get to keep all your money, and there's one seat for every 15 entries, which is pretty good. So it looks like, you know, five or six seats plus some cash money to be awarded. And it's Fairgrounds and Gulfstream.
Oh, it includes Gulfstream. Well, that's nice that you have that that choice. And are they all optional races?
Yes. I think five races you have to play at the Fairgrounds. But other than that, you know, you're going to have your pick of, I guess 24, maybe 25 races tomorrow. So it's a really good contest format. I like the interesting twists. You know, I think we could do better with a little bit more creativity in how we structure contests, but so I like that. And I think I certainly prefer and do much better at, the $2 win place format than the live bankroll.
All right. Well, we're going to wish you good luck in that contest, and we will start handicapping this weekend's races, which we've chosen all the fairground stakes, or five of the six fairground stakes. Starting with the seventh race at Fairgrounds, December 21st, it's the Bonapas Stakes, 5.5 furlongs on the turf. There is some question about whether there's going to be buckets of rain or only a little bit of rain. So we'll assume that they're going to be on the turf, but if you have an alternate pick for off the turf, feel free to share that. But let's be optimistic and hope they're going to stay on the turf. This particular race is 5.5 furlongs on the turf, purse of $75,000 for three-year-olds and up. Michael is our guest. We will let you start.
Okay. Bonaparte, it's interesting that the race is named after Bonaparte. I don't know that he ever won a race on the turf, but he might have. But he was a stone cold sprinter who ran most of his races in Louisiana and then went and won the Vosburg one year. So let's hope that it does stay on the turf. I know Chris has a much more detailed weather forecast than I do. He's studied the models, apparently. I'll go here. So this is, you know, we have to first look at, I think, at the fairgrounds on the turf, where the rails are. They make a really big difference in how the what running styles. If you've watched the last couple of days of the fairgrounds, the rails on the turf are out 24 feet. And there have literally been horses that are winning running on the outside rail. It's really quite amazing where these horses are coming from, way off, kind of off the pace, but way out in the middle of the track. So I think the rails tomorrow will be at zero. So that's going to change, I think, the running styles that are favored. It'd be interesting to pay attention to it early in the card just to see if that comes through. So what happens is, I think the rails at zero really favor the early speed. And the rails out really favor come from behind horses that are not on the rail. So with that in mind, I'm going to go with Recount, who is a recent claim by Carl Broberg from Churchill Downs. I mean, you know, Broberg has done well this meet. This is kind of the first meet that he's done well here at the fairgrounds. He does well everywhere else, but he's won a lot of races. He's won a couple of turf races already. I think he probably moves this horse up a few lengths, and I think that might be enough to get him to the winner's circle. He will show some speed here, so I think that's going to be my longer shot play. The obvious horse is Made You Look, who I saw and bet on in the four-star Dave at Saratoga. This horse is cutting back. I guess this was a private purchase from Chad Brown, and I'm not sure who owned it before, but I know Chad Brown had trained this horse. So they're cutting this horse back in distance. He has shown some speed going longer. And Philip Bauer is a legitimate trainer. He actually won a couple races, I think, at Saratoga. So he can have this horse ready. He gets Florent Giroux. But he'll be a shorter price. So I'm not really sure I'm willing to take, you know, a favorites type price on Made You Look. But those would be my two. And you asked if it's off the turf. I think it becomes a much more clearer picture. And I like the bottom horse, Wilbo, who has really proven the most proven dirt form of any. And I think he would become a very strong selection, in my opinion, if the race comes off the turf, especially anticipating, you know, a couple of scratches.
All right, Chris, where did you land here?
Well, I think the Recount, the horse, the six horse that Michael pointed out, is interesting because he does have sort of back figures that are very fast, and he's first off the claim for a good trainer, first off the claim. So, you know, that pick is interesting to me. I'm not too high on Made You Look. I actually picked him before, I think, on the pod, but I usually don't like sprinters cutting all the way back to like 5 or 5.5 furlongs. That typically, to me, isn't a good move, and also the move away from Chad Brown. So to me, I'm willing to take a stand against that Made You Look, the three horses, the favorite. So I'm kind of with Michael on one of his selections and not kind of against on the other. For me, I like the point that he made that this race, he's looking for a speed horse. I agree. There's really no absolute burner in here that has previous turf form, but there is a horse in here that I think is very, very quick and should be able to clear early, and that's the 8-horse Gray Attempt, who has never been on the turf. His breeding's sort of neutral for the turf, but going 5.5 furlongs, I'm not as reliant on the breeding for the turf. And I've always said on the pod and for many years that I think dirt speed is faster than sprint speed. So I really like Gray Attempt. I mean, when he's gotten the lead, in his past races on fast dirt. He's 3 for 3. And in a race earlier this year at Oaklawn, he was only a length behind Landeskog, who probably is as quick as any horse in the country in terms of early foot. So I if this horse can handle the turf at all, I really think he opens up on these. And that long fairground stretch can be tough on front runners, but if you get an easy lead going 5.5 furlongs on the turf, you can win. And so Gray Attempt to me is really solid in here. And I actually like him even if it's off the turf, because, you know, he's proven on dirt. I do think Wilbo will be the one to beat if it stays on the turf, on dirt. I mean, if it goes off the turf onto dirt. I think the one to beat on the turf, though, is the one horse Fast Boat. I think he's clearly the best horse in the race in terms of proven turf form. So for me, if it stays on the turf, I really like Gray Attempt. I have to use Fast Boat. I can maybe use Recount and one other horse that I won't mention because Scott may be on it. I don't want to steal his thunder. And on the dirt, I'm still with Gray Attempt, but I think, you know, then it becomes, you know, Wilbo becomes the one that he has to beat. So that's the way I see this one.
All right. I thought this race was perhaps the toughest race on the stakes card today. So I don't have a strong feeling on it. I did run with Jazzy Times at a price. This is the kind of race, if it's in any kind of a contest, I'm going to be looking for a price, especially if it's a win place type contest. And I would roll with Jazzy Times because he's been running on turf all year and he's been running against top competition. And we're talking about World of Trouble, Ohm, Totally Boss, Girls Know Best. His last race was on the dirt. It was an off the turfer. He was 3 wide. The horses that won were on the inside the whole way, including Wilbo. And I like the pattern. I think he's ready to run the best race of the year for him if it's on turf. And so that would be my pick in this race, but I don't see myself really betting it. I don't, you know, I would play it in a contest, but I wouldn't bet it because I don't feel that strongly about it. On the dirt, I like Wilbo, but I'm afraid he will be a little bit of an underlay because they're going to love him. I think he'll be 2-1 or less. And the price play for a slop course would be Pete's Play Call, who is 3 for 5 on the slop and second off a small layoff. I don't really have much more to add about this race, but I don't know if you guys have comments on that one.
I agree. I think this race, turf or dirt, but turf especially, is very competitive, probably one of the most competitive of the grouping of stakes. Pete's Play Call on dirt was actually my second choice. I think the only thing, Scott, for, you know, in the like Fast Boat is a stone cold closer on turf, and just the races I've watched over the last 2-3 weeks when the rails have been zero, it's so hard for those horses to handle the turns and making up any ground in the stretch. So that's why I would encourage people to watch the early turf races and see whether my theory is kind of playing out, you know, and makes sense. If it's not, then just throw it out of the window. But it would be important to check the early turf races just to see how they're running.
And I would say, I'm just looking a little more closely at Jazzy Times as you were talking, and Jazzy Times has run near the lead before. So I think that I agree with Chris that there's not very much speed in this race. And I also agree that Gray Attempt will likely go for the lead. But I think that Jazzy Times could be just off the lead. And I think he'll be a higher price than what they have him in the morning line of 5-1. I just don't see anybody playing this horse at 5-1. I don't see it. I see the horse at like more like 10-1. So we'll see what happens there.
On Pete's play call, definitely on if it's off the turf, you have to use him. And I think he actually has a chance, even if it stays on. His turf form isn't that bad. I mean, if you look at it, looks bad at first glance. But if you go back and look at the two times he's run on turf, his first turf race was actually better than his prior dirt races. And the only other time he ran on turf was routing, where he's just not a router. So I actually think even on the turf, he's live at a price. But I really like this race. I'm not nearly as ambivalent as the two of you. I think Gray Attempt is going to clear this field with ease and will be very tough to overhaul, whether it's turf or dirt. If it's on the turf, I think Fast Boat's a danger. But I hope Michael's right and that it will be tough for him to come from off the pace on the rail. And on the dirt, you know, Wilbo's a danger. But I, you know, on the dirt, I'm even more excited about playing a horse I think can clear the field early. So I really like this race. I think Gray Attempt is a good, really good play.
One thing I will add about Gray Attempt is that his best work ever came before the last race, where he ran first of 81 at the distance. He ran a 47.1 four furlongs, and he didn't run that well in his layoff race, but often those great workouts are followed by a prep and then the explosion. So I will say the Gray Attempt was my first choice in the race, and I found reasons to back off him. But I would encourage anybody who's playing this race in multi-race exotics to include the horse, because especially if Chris likes him as much as he does.
Just a note on that last race, he got off to a poor start, and that pretty much finished him just right at the start. He needs the lead. So I'm really counting on him breaking alertly this time and getting the lead.
All right, we'll move to the ninth race at Fairgrounds. It's the Blushing KD Stakes, a mile and a 16th on turf for $75,000. It's for fillies and mares, three-year-olds and up. Chris, why don't you get us started?
Well, this one is tough. I mean, this one, I think it will be all about trips. We'll determine who wins. There were two horses that I liked, one much better price than the other, and that is number five, Not a Prada Price. Not a Prada Price. Yeah, I think I said that right. Just a really solid horse that's coming off a poor effort, but that was on yielding turf. So if the turf is yielding, I'm probably lose some enthusiasm for this horse. But, you know, if the turf is still in pretty good shape and they actually keep this horse on the grass, to me, she can win this with a repeat of her last race or race two back. She has some tactical speed. So, and she's got a rider, Corey Lannery, who really values saving ground. Now, according to Michael, that might not be as good as it typically is on the turf, but assuming it's not a bad place to be on the rail, I think this horse will work out a good trip. And at 12-1, it was pretty easy to kind of go with that horse. The other horse I liked quite a bit is Smart Emma, who really runs well. Her last race wasn't that bad. She's usually more consistent, but she really, for some reason, James Graham just really grabbed her early and just hammerlocked her most of the race, and she didn't like it. And I would just toss that last race. And again, her prior races are good enough to win in here. I thought she would be a higher morning line off that last race, but she's only 5-1. So at that price, I'm not as interested in this race because it's pretty open. But if she floated up above her morning line, I think she'll get a good trip as well. So for me, it's number two, Smart Emma, and four, Lost in, or five, Not a Prada Price.
All right, Michael, where did you land here?
Yeah, I landed actually on the horse that Chris likes second, Smart Emma. James Graham is really riding this course very well. He stays with this horse. I saw the same thing Chris saw, that he can basically just throw the last race out. And I think any of the previous three races on turf are going to be very competitive with this group. I don't think this horse will be 5-1 either. I think you know, I think this horse will likely be maybe 10 to 1 plus. I just, you know, they're not connections that are bet a lot, and there's other connections in here that the fans at the fairgrounds tend to land on. But if she runs her any of the three races, three previous turf races, I think she is, you know, right at the wire. And, you know, she's got the number two hole, so she'll the rail is the place to be when the rails are at zero. So she'll be saving ground, and I think she'll be closer to the lead. You know, she has had the lead on the turf before with Graham, and I don't think he's going to be scared to just go for it if no one else takes it. I kind of saw the race not with a lot of, you know, there's a little bit more speed in here than we talked about in the other race. My second pick here would be a longer shot, a horse that I think is going to get maybe a better, you know, a trip, which is English Soul. Competitive numbers, needs to run her best race to win today. But I think she's going to be right off the speed. And she has run, you know, second to what I think will be the favorite, Dream Passage, by a length. So she's competitive that way. And again, I think she's going to be, you know, not 6 to 1. I think this horse will be, again, more like, you know, over 10 to 1 here. I do want to say something about Blushing KD, a horse that I did see run at the fairgrounds on a couple times. She was kind of the precursor to Rachel Alexandra. She, you know, won the Fairgrounds Oaks, and then she won the Kentucky Oaks. And I think she even beat the boys at some point. But I did see her run a couple times at the fairgrounds. She was a great filly. And again, funny, but I don't think she ever ran on the turf. So they're naming a race after her that, you know, that is on the turf. But she was a superstar. I mean, she was an absolute freak of a horse. I think she died right after her 4-year-old year, or maybe in her 3-year-old year, actually.
The naming committees at these racetracks need to be held accountable for these odd names. All right. I'm going to just address the two horses that you two mentioned. I was initially on Not a Prada Price, and I thought that her last race, it was completely a prep, and she had some issues at the beginning. And I thought, well, it's definitely a prep, so she could get back to her top number. The problem I have with her is that, A, she likes to be near the lead, and there's a lot of speed in this race. The second problem I have with her is that she is the highest-weighted horse in the race, and I just don't like her giving 4 pounds to almost every other horse in the race. So that's why I didn't land on her. And Smart Emma is a horse that I picked on the pod at least one other time. And this is one of those things where I liked a horse a lot. Everything, the stars aligned, and then she just didn't run that well. So, and then I even played her in her next race after that because I thought there was an excuse, and she still didn't run well. So she's sort of like, I'm done with Smart Emma for now. That doesn't mean she's not going to win, but, you know, she definitely has figures that can win this race. But that's why I didn't pick her, because I used to be on her train and I got off it. I do think this race is completely wide open. And in that case, I definitely want to go with a horse that's 10 to 1 or higher. The horse that I'm landing on is Flower Party. She won her first 4 races. She's 6 for 11 lifetime. She's working faster than ever since she came to the U.S., running a 59.2 bullet at Fairgrounds a couple weeks ago. And in her debut U.S. race, she was off awkwardly and rank climbing into the first turn. So you can toss that race, and it still came out her top number on the sheets. It was her best number, which matched her 3-year-old best. So despite that trouble, she ran her top number. And then the next race, I don't know what was wrong, but it was a mile and a half. And I'm just going to toss that race because she was off for 6 months after that race. I try to use trainer stats with care. I try not to be overly reliant on them, but when I have a theory about a horse and then I can bolster it with a trainer stat, I will do it. And in this case, Michael Stidham, off a layoff of 180 days or more with four-year-olds and up on the turf, he's 11 for 38 with a 257 ROI. But at Fairgrounds, he's 5 for 15 with a 362 ROI. So I think that she's got a great shot here, at least 10 to 1. There may be a case that she could be prepping for a longer race, but the fact is that she ran her best number in the U.S. at this distance, at this track, despite trouble. So that's where I'm going to land. Any further comments, you guys?
Well, I kind of like Flower Party as well, although I really do think this is a prep for a longer race. But wouldn't shock me if it won, and if it's a really good price. I would be interested definitely at least in using that horse, but I really do think her future is going longer, and this is probably a stepping stone towards that. But her trainer is good off the layoff, and she certainly could improve enough to win. Just one other point I want to make between the two horse Smart Emma and the five horse Not a Prada Price, at the same odds, I would pick Smart Emma. That would be my play. I'm just going off the morning line. I was a little surprised at the morning line. I do think Smart Emma could go up higher, so I'll be watching the odds board with those two. Not a Prada Price was 12 to 1 and Smart Emma is 5 to 1 in the morning line. But if they were to go off at similar odds, I'm probably leaning towards the 2. I think she's probably the most likely winner in here.
Yeah, the only other thing I would add is if this race does come off the turf, that I'm going to be very interested in the 3 Avies Mineshaft, who I think is bred well for the dirt. And Josie Carroll used to have a string down here for years. And this horse has worked very well the last couple of weeks over the dirt. And I really like horses that are trying dirt running from synth, especially Woodbine for the first time. So I think I'd be interested to see. The horse has some class as well. I would be interested to see the odds on the 3 Avies Mineshaft. If the race goes to the dirt, I will definitely be betting this horse if the race goes dirt.
I didn't want to go on with too many horses, but that would be my second choice on the turf, Avies Mineshaft. If something were to happen with Flower Party, if she scratched or something, I would choose Avies Mineshaft, who has always been pretty fast, who I think is better on turf than synth, and comes off a synth race where she ran just about her best number. The trainer, as you mentioned, is pretty good at Fairgrounds. In fact, she's 18% lifetime at Fairgrounds. So that would be an alternative price play if there's other things that you like about Avies Mineshaft. If it's on the dirt, I haven't handicapped it for slop, but Avies Mineshaft, yeah, I can see it. Absolutely.
If we're on the dirt pick, I would stick with Smart Emma. She runs fine on either turf or dirt. So even if it comes off, I think I would stick with her.
Okay, we'll go to the 10th race at Fairgrounds. It's the Sugar Bowl Stakes. 6 furlongs on the dirt, a $75,000 purse for 2-year-olds. Michael, what do you think?
Yeah, I tried to get away from the favorites here, but at the end of the day, I just couldn't. So I landed on the 1, who I think will be a little bit higher priced than the morning line, 5 to 2. I don't know how to pronounce this horse. Sha-Sha Shake Me Up, maybe.
That is correct. Correct.
I believe that, you know, John Dooley gets the toughest job of pronouncing all these some Cajun names and some names like this. So, but look, this horse in his first race just won very nicely. And if you know, the trainer, Keith DeSormo, who used to train for me when I owned horses down in Louisiana, he is definitely not known as a horseman who sends his horses out ready first time out. So I have to believe that there's some more to this horse than even his fast figure that he ran first race. So I'm hoping that he improves just a smidge here. And if he does, I really think getting the rail, having a little speed, James Graham, really, really fast work. Again, not Keith DeSormo like. This horse has been working fast from the first time he stepped on the track. So there's obviously inherent natural speed here. That's where I landed. I landed on the one. I think that the horse to beat is the Asmussen horse, the Gold Street, and he'll likely be the favorite, you know, especially if the race comes up sloppy. He's already his best race of his career was his last race in the slop. He's running against some very nice horses as well. And he would be the deserving favorite. I don't think this race is very complicated. So those are the two that I landed on.
Chris, where are you landing here?
Well, I really don't like this race very much. I mean, they all could step up and improve. These two-year-old stakes sprints are really tough for me. I do think the one horse, I would have said Shay Shay Shake Me Up, but I'll take you guys' word for it that it's Shaw Shaw Shake Me Up. For all the things that Michael said, it seems like that horse is maybe the most likely winner, but I couldn't take a short price in here. So I thought all the favorites look like they want the lead. Maybe they hook up. It's only 6 furlongs, so maybe the speed of the speed wins. But I thought the 5-horse self-taught could sit a perfect trip, kind of tuck in behind those speed horses and out-finish them. I thought that last race was pretty strong. If you look back at those horses, many of them came back and ran well since then, even though it wasn't a stakes race. And for two-year-olds, you know, an allowance race, stakes race, there's really not much difference. So this is a second start for Albert Staal. He took him down to run in a stakes at the fairgrounds. So I thought that horse might be the one that could float up in price and could sit a perfect trip and maybe pull an upset. But I'm not real excited about this race.
I'm actually somewhat excited about this race. I do like Sha Sha Shake Me Up. And I got that pronunciation from Travis Stone at Churchill. So that's I'm believing that he's correct. The horse showed natural speed, was barely whipped. I mean, just like just so that they were sort of just superfluous whips just so that he could, you know, feel the whip a little bit. He galloped out big with his ears pricked. Calumet horses, this is owned by Calumet. They very rarely win first out. And this trainer, Keith DeSormo, he's had 20 first-time starters in the last 5 years for Calumet. He's won twice with first-time starters. This is one of the horses. And then the other one, he then went on to run in a stake in California, and the horse won that race. So I like this horse a lot, but I do question what the price is going to be on the horse. He was 5-2 in his first race, and that, like you said, Michael, he's not even known for – the trainer's not known for winning with first-out horses, and – the ownership is not known for that either. And he was still 5-2. So the horse could get crushed. I think it's hard to watch that race and not be enamored of the horse. So I'm probably going to go with a price. So I'm going to call my win play in this race. It's Ryan's Cat, who is as fast as any of these horses and has already run twice. He's run as fast as the possible favorite Gold Street. He's been running nothing but bullets since his last race. This trainer, James Chapman, once he gets him good, he keeps him good, at least for a while. And at 5-1 morning line off a 14-length win, that wasn't even his best race. that's the horse that I would play. But, you know, price, of course, is always the final arbiter in the scenario. So if somehow he were going to go off at 2-1 and Sha-Sha Shake Me Up was higher than him, then I would go with the Sha-Sha Shake Me Up. If I'm playing any kind of multi-race, I'm including the 1 and the 3, Sha-Sha Shake Me Up and Ryan's Cat here.
I want to add one thing. So I do the daily selections for the newspaper in New Orleans for the fairgrounds. And actually my second choice in this race was the horse that Chris, I think, talked about, Self-Taught. So I don't want my readers, all three of them out there, to think that I'm giving out different horses. I just reminded myself of who I picked second, and I did like Self-Taught. And again, I'm trying to give people the winner and then also give them some sort of value play, which is usually my second choice in the race. So Self-Taught was my second choice, but I think the 1-2-5 that's going to be a tough exacta to crack.
All right. Well, at least that race isn't completely inscrutable. We will go to one race that may be inscrutable, and that is the 11th at Fairgrounds, the Buddy Diliberto Memorial. It's a 1 1/16 on the turf. Another $75,000 purse for three-year-olds and up. Chris, where are you thinking here?
Well, and here, I thought that there could be a pretty solid pace up front. I was trying to like the 6-horse Sailing Solo, who seems to have gotten really good here lately. Looked really good in its last race, but the pace may take its toll with that horse. But I did kind of like that horse some. But where I landed and here was on two horses. The 7-horse Captivating Moon. I like this horse. It's been running on the dirt, so they may be in here hoping it comes off the turf, and because it's cross-entered in the 12th race, which is on the dirt. I don't think it has any chance in the 12th race, so I'm hoping they keep it on the turf in this turf race, because the horse has really good turf form and a much better chance to win in here. So if they stay here, I really like this horse. I think it fits really nicely, even though it has been running on the dirt lately. I think it's probably better on the turf. And if it gets back on the turf, I expect to see a good race. It has a really good closing kick, so I think a fast pace will help in that regard, as long as the track is not favoring speed. Michael hinted that it could be. We'll have to wait and see. So, you know, that horse I like quite a bit, and I still like the horse, maybe not as much if it's on a sloppy track just because of its running style, but it would fit on either surface. And the other horse I like, in case Captivating Moon gets scratched, is Parlor, the recent claim for Mike Maker. We all know he does really well, these turf routers, off the claim. This horse is just a really solid horse. It actually got outrun by Sailing Solo last time out. But now it joins the Maker barn. And, you know, its numbers fit here really nicely. So to me, that horse is probably the one I go with if Captivating Moon doesn't run in here. You know, the two favorites are solid in here, 12 and 13 Factor This and Dot Matrix, but they both drew extreme outside post positions, and Dot Matrix is spotting weight to many of the runners in here. So to me, that I'm not knocking the horses, but with those post positions, I think you take a shot against them in here. So I'm leaning on Captivating Moon, assuming the horse runs either on turf or dirt. If the horse doesn't go, then I'm probably on Parlor.
All right, Captivating Moon, a very interesting choice, and be very interesting to see where he ends out running. Michael, what were you thinking here?
I'm thinking that this is a race I really, really like for a couple reasons. I landed on Parlor following my claim into a stakes race angle that I used earlier. But Mike Maker, he just seems like he's done this move before. And the horse really doesn't have to improve at all off his last race to be right there at the finish. The jockey, Adam Biskitza, the biscuit stays with this horse. And what I don't usually watch a lot of replays. That's not one of my greatest talents. So I'll preface this next statement by saying that first. But I did go back and watch all the early week races at the fairgrounds because the rail was out. I mean, was down and at 6 feet. And this horse probably got one of the worst, to me, the worst of the track of that week. And he almost still beat the horse that had the lead the whole way, who should have won Sailing Solo. But he beat the next horse by 5 1/4. He gets Maker. He's come back to work a bullet out of 151. I just think the price, the claim, the jockey sticking, the bad trip, the better track this time. I think he's a really good, solid play at anywhere, probably around up to 6 to 1 or up. That's my public pick and also my private pick. The second horse I liked here was Renaissance Frolic. Watching his last race, it just looked like he was never, to me, he was never going to last, and he did. And that, to me, says he's gutsy in game, and he's really gotten good over, you know, the last 3 months. He's 3 for 3 in his last three races, all consistent on the turf. Again, he gets James Graham. He's going to have some inside speed, which could be very dangerous tomorrow. And, you know, at 5 to 1, I think he's bettable at 5 to 1, probably down to like 7 to 2-ish. So those would be the two that I'm going to go for. And I'm hoping, you know, Parlor stays around that 10 to 1, because that might be the key bet for me tomorrow if that happens.
All right. Well, I was playing possum a little bit, but I actually really like Chris's pick of Captivating Moon. Captivating Moon is one of these horses that I've followed for a long time. I've played him in multiple scenarios, including at the NHC when he was a three-year-old. And I think he actually didn't quite get up. I think he ended up getting third, closing at a price. He is better on turf, but he proved he was in form by winning two races ago on the slop. He's only developed a little bit since he was a two-year-old. I think he's just found himself. And I think if he goes here, which he should, whether it's on dirt or turf, he can rock at a price. I think he's going to go off at higher than 10 to 1. He's got a jockey who Chris Block has had success with. And but he loses Lannery, who gets off for Space Mountain. So I actually think that can help the price. And he is a closer, a major, as Chris mentioned, he's a major closer in a race filled with speed. He's also been working his best in going into the last few races. So this is when you're going to get a price on this horse, and this is when you can take him. And I think whether it's on dirt or turf, he's the horse to beat in this race. And I think he'll run here because in the other race, which is the next race we're going to talk about, the Tenacious, he is in that race. He's not only slower than most of the horses, but he carries more weight than almost every other horse. So I think that he's probably entered in that race just for purposes of helping the Fairgrounds racing office. And he's a pretty strong play for me in this race, whether it's on dirt or turf. Although, granted, I do think it's a pretty wide open race, and it would not surprise me if Space Mountain, who's my second choice, also gets up at a price. He's 8 to 1 morning line. I think you can go in many different directions here. It's just that I found the horse that ticked a lot of different boxes for me with Captivating Moon.
Well, it sounds like this is the first race where all three of us sort of triangulate on two horses, the 5-horse Parlor and 7-horse Captivating Moon. So maybe that's the exact box to take out of this race, given all three of our opinions combined.
So let's go to the 12th race at Fairgrounds. It's the Tenacious, a mile and 70 yards on the dirt. Another one with a purse of $75,000. This one for three-year-olds and up. Michael, why don't you get us started on this one?
Yeah, so I did not see Tenacious run. I think he ran in the 60s or so. It was a little before my time. I landed here on MG Warrior. He's coming back off of a pretty good layoff. But he was a high class horse, as a last year. He actually likes this track, a lot. He was kind of unlucky in his first start at, 6 furlongs not to win that race. He came back and ran a very good race stretching out for the first time. And then, really ran his winning race in the maiden in March of last year here at this track. I think moving into the Brad Cox barn, not to disparage Dallas Stewart, but I do think that will probably move him up a few lengths and a few points on the speed rating, whichever ones you use. So, you know, at the price, 10-1, he would be a must bet. You know, I don't think we'll get 10-1 on MG Warrior, but anywhere, you know, above 5-1, he's probably a pretty good play for me, since I know he likes the track. And some horses, you know, don't, you know, that are shipping in, and we have a few here, you know, they don't necessarily like the Fairgrounds. So this horse is proven over the track. Brad Cox is really good with, you know, long layoff horses, and also very good with first time in his barn. He gets some weight here, which is another positive. So I just think there's a lot of positive factors to point to MG Warrior as a good play, 5-1-ish plus. My second pick here would be more of a long shot, Ballard High, speaking of Dallas Stewart. Clearly the horse is, you know, has been beaten by some in here. He may not be as fast, but he's still developing, I think, a little bit. His last two races were progressions. And I think Dallas Stewart, clearly from a, you know, a pattern, trainer stat pattern standpoint, third off the layoff, he is just money. I mean, he is, you know, 30%. So I do think this horse is going to run the best race of his career. I also think that he's going to be higher than 10-1. So we may be talking about a 15-1 shot here with a trainer that wins 30% of those races. I think by anybody's mathematical calculations, that would be, you know, some sort of value. So those are my two. I'm probably a little bit longer shots here, but I would still play Ballard High and MG Warrior in the slop, since both are kind of proven over the slop. Ballard High running second, and MG Warrior has a big win over the slop. So those would be my two in the Tenacious handicap.
All right. Nice price plays. And I agree with you that MG Warrior at 10-1 does seem like a pipe dream. So let's hope that you get 5-1 or better. Chris, what did you think in this race?
Well, I think this race is all about Brad Cox and the two horses he has in here. He's a wizard. He really knows how to win races, especially when they move to his barn. He's also good off a layoff. So all the things that Michael said about MG Warrior, I agree with. I don't think you'll get 10-1, especially if he really is live and he looks like he is. He'll get bet, but I definitely think you have to respect him. I really like Blended Citizen. I've always liked him, and now he's in the Brad Cox barn, and not surprisingly, he runs the best race of his life in his first start for Brad Cox, and he has some back class. You know, he won the Peter Pan. Now he's making a second start for Brad Cox off of that race, and he's worked well since then. So to me, he's the horse to beat. I just don't know if you'll get 5-1, but at 5-1, to me, he's the most likely winner and a pretty good play. MG Warrior, certainly a great play at 10-1. I have a feeling those two will be about the same odds when they go off at post time. I could be wrong. Between the two, I would go with Blended Citizen. But those are the two I'm the most interested in this race, are both Brad Cox runners.
Well, I have to admit that I didn't handicap this race exhaustively. So I'm going to throw out a price that Michael mentioned as my official pick, but just remember that it's sort of a lukewarm pick. That is Ballard High. He's got a pattern that I really like, that where he ran pretty fast as a four-year-old earlier in the year, and in fact has a big win on the mud. So if it's muddy, he's got a great shot. So ran well as a four-year-old earlier in the year, and then took a few months off during mid four-year-old year, and now is third off a layoff. And the second off a layoff was just about as good as he's ever run. And kind of like admission office last week, it looks like he's ready to pop the best race of his life. Now, will that be enough? I don't know. But at 15-1 or so, poised to run the race of his life, and keeping in mind that horses like Blended Citizen and MG Warrior could get overplayed, that's the value play for me. I did like MG Warrior a lot as my second choice. And I think Blended Citizen definitely has a shot. And I've hated him on the turf every race, so it's about time that he got back on the dirt. He did win at 9-2. Oddly, he was 9-2 in his last race for Brad Cox on the dirt. It was as fast as his Belmont race, according to the sheets. And the only reason why I wouldn't go with him right now, I think he's going to get played off of that race. If he's 5-1, he's a pretty good value, but my guess is he's going to be lower than 5-1. And I think that there's a good chance that he reacts to that race because he hasn't run that fast since for 18 months. I think there's a good chance that he's going to react to that race, and next time will be the time to play Blended Citizen.
All right. Just keep in mind, he fairly convincingly trounced Ballard High last time, and he had a not the best of trips, Blended Citizen, in that last race. Although Ballard High, I think, is a great horse to include in exotics. I don't know if it'll run fast enough to win, but I definitely think it could hit the board. But to me, Blended Citizen kind of is the obvious play at 5-1. If you're right, and they bet him down off of that last race, which was an allowance race, then, you know, it's always about price, but I think he's the most likely winner in the race.
Yeah, they might not bet him down. There are some other good horses in the race. I like CZ Rocket. The only reason why I'm not playing him is because he's a 7-2 morning line, and he could easily go off that low or lower. He's got a really big back number. He's clearly faster than Ballard High. So I'm not going to bet a lot of money on Ballard High. He would be more like an include in multi-race plays. But you know, because I think he'll be 15-1 or higher, and he does have that right form pattern, he's got a great shot. It wouldn't surprise me to see Blended Citizen rock in this race. As we've said all along, price is final arbiter.
Before, I don't know if what your plan was for the remainder of the time we have, but I know Michael this is his home track and he's in the contest. I'd just like to hear if he had any opinions on any of the other races, if he had had a chance to look at them on the undercard for the fairgrounds.
I actually have, since I've got to turn in my picks for the newspaper in about an hour. So I've looked at the other races. The early part, you know, there's a really interesting horse in the third, Taraz. She could be really special. I mean, she's going to be, you know, 3-5, But that's an interesting horse to look at. She's certainly a horse that could win the Fairgrounds Oaks and maybe even the Kentucky Oaks. I don't really – there is a horse in the fifth race that I'm interested in. I hope I'm not giving my opponents too much information. But a horse called Cask, who is a Michael Stidham trainee, I believe, and I saw her run her first race a couple weeks ago, and she was kind of compromised by the track, and she was also very she looked very green. I mean, she was kind of, you know, not interested in the race, and it makes sense to me that they're putting blinkers on her to on him today. I hope it stays on the turf. The race kind of came back faster than I thought, figure wise, so that's good. Has had a workout since, kind of maintenance. You know, I don't know. I was really kind of surprised by the morning line price of that horse, 6-1. I sure thought that would be a bigger price. So I don't know that I'd be interested at 5-1 or less. But if Cask in the fifth race goes off higher, that would be a horse I'd be interested in. And in the same race, there's a Dallas Stewart horse, the 10 Winning Impression, who goes first turf. Who ran kind of competitively in his first two starts on dirt going short. But the mama won her race, I think her only race, on the turf. So I think that horse moves up and could get a nice price. Dallas Stewart, not really known for first-time turfers, but this horse kind of fits being by Painter. And also, like I said, the mama won first time out and West Point Thoroughbred. So I don't know what they were doing running them on the dirt first two out, but maybe this was the spot all along. At least that's what I'm hoping for. So that's a race that'll interest me from a contest standpoint, just because it's a deep field and there's a lot of unknowns, and I think the price could be right. But, you know, the real juice – in the contest races are, you know, kind of in the races that we went over. I think there are opportunities in those races to find the right price to play in a contest.
Chris, did you look at any of the other races on the card? I'm giving him the polite amount of time to unmute.
Sorry all about right. that. Thanks for being polite. There, I do like the fifth race.
I'm going to be able to run an ad. I'll be able to run a 30-second ad in that slot.
Okay, great. Good idea. I do like that same race that Michael had pointed out, and the two horses that he liked in there, I think, fit. There were a couple more that are a little higher price I thought were interesting. One was the 8-horse Sunrise Kitten, who really has good workouts prior to its debut and has worked well since. And in that last race, it just looked like a horse that needed a race, and it actually broke through the gate before the race. And we all know that's like absolute toss kind of a thing. And it still ran halfway decent, even though it broke slowly and went really wide and looked green all the way around. Just the kind of horse, second start for Maker. It's owned by Ken Ramsey, that you'd expect to see a big improvement second out. So the 8-horse is 8-1, the morning line in that maiden race. I like that one. And then Calculate is a horse, the 5-horse, who really improved in its first try going on turf last out, even though it had a lot of trouble, had some major trouble in about midway through the race and still finished up pretty well. With a better trip, maybe could have won that race. So to me, the 5 Calculate and the 8 Sunrise Kitten in there are really interesting at 8-1 in the morning line in a race that's the kind in a contest you really want to play and look for a price, because it's that sort of race, you know, 2-year-old maiden race on the turf going two turns where there'll be all kinds of angles that you can play on. You know, I had a couple and Michael has a couple, and there's probably several other horses in the race that you can make a case for. So to me, that was a great contest race and the kind of race that you want to look for, especially given the format that Michael described. And I'm wondering, Michael, this may be too much that you're not willing to give away, but do you have like a triple bet horse picked out, or are you going to play it by ear? Or is there someone are you willing to share, or just let us know what your strategy is with that triple play horse? Are you going to wait till the last race, or?
I don't know. I mean, I think in this race, I guarantee you that I think that if someone triple bets this race and wins, they're going to win a seat. You know, it's just that kind of race. I don't think that Sunrise Kitten will be 8-1, but if you tell me right now that Sunrise Kitten's 8-1 and Cask is, 5-1, I'm switching. Because I mean, I agree with you. That's why I said I was kind of surprised when I saw. I actually made the picks before the morning line came out, and I was really surprised. I thought Sunrise Kitten would be the favorite, or at least 7-2. If that price stays where it's at, that is certainly a horse that I'm going to have to give a long look to, because you're absolutely right. Kitten's Joy, Maker, Ramsey's. The last race is almost a throw out. In terms of the strategy, I mean, I'd be interested to hear what you guys say. Y'all are much more successful at contests. I mean, I'm probably, if I do play two entries, I'll probably save one of the triple bets till later. Certainly not getting involved, I don't think, early. And just see where I'm at, trying to figure what the price, what the amount is you're going to have to win. I'm thinking it's going to be around, or to qualify, it's probably going to be around 2,500, 2,000, 2,250. So, I don't know. I'm probably going to play it both ways, kind of save one, maybe save some triple bet. But this is a race where I could go triple bet for sure. There's no question about it. Cause if I'm right, I'm definitely going to probably win a seat. And that's, that's all you can really ask for.
Yeah. I personally would not. I haven't handicapped the fifth race, but I just scrolled through to look at the initial numbers. And I think it would be nuts, unless you have some, serious opinion in this race, it would be nuts to bet your triple and, in the fifth. Now, if there's value and you're like, hey, this horse is 15-1, he should be 5-1, maybe, but anything could happen in this race, especially with a bunch of horses that haven't run on the turf. And then it also, you could easily have a fast horse like Calculate. I mean, if Calculate is 5-1 or higher, I doubt he will be, but just looking at the numbers, but he was 50-1 in his last race. So maybe, I guess, again, price dictates, but when it's a maiden race, especially on the turf with horses that haven't run on it, you're really taking a big shot. You're guessing, because you it's hard to look at the other horse's form. So while I agree with you that if you can get it and you have a strong opinion that you should play the triple here, I would go with one where you feel that you have a more solid handle on the race. If I were playing this contest, which I'm not, and I haven't handicapped all the races, I haven't handicapped really any of the races other than what we've covered here, I would actually play my triple bet on Captivating Moon. Like, I'm not in the contest, so it doesn't really matter, but that's the horse that I would send it in on, because the more I look at the horse, the more I like it. Well, what about you, Chris?
Well, I think you always need to really think about these kinds of questions, because especially when you have a contest with different rules, because it just comes down to a game with rules that you have to try to maximize your chances of winning based on the rules. And value in a contest is not the same as value on an everyday betting a race. It all depends on the rules. But to me, you can, like Michael said, almost win a contest with one play. If you play a price horse with your triple bet, doesn't mean you'll win, but to me, it's like really leveraged multiple times the value of that one play. And so I think you do want to take a chance, and maybe it's in more of a wide open race where there's several horses that all look about the same and one goes off at 15 to one, that'd be a great, great. And maybe, you know, you had to get a little bit lucky, but to me, from a value standpoint, one play, you can win the contest. I mean, so I think you want to think about it that way and use that pick, especially if you have two entries. You can always save one of your triple plays and play something's a little maybe lower price, more likely to win if you're in contention late. But from a value standpoint, when you have that, and I don't think I've ever been in a contest where you got three times. I've been a double value pick, but I think I've ever been in one with triple value pick. And to me, you have to really, really spend time thinking about where you want to play that pick. And I would be very aggressive with that because, I mean, this is a chance to basically win or almost assure yourself to be in contention at the end with one pick. And so I would at least be aggressive in the selection so you have that chance to win it there. I mean, to be conservative with that play just doesn't make any sense at all to me. You do have, I guess, eight plays altogether, so you have seven other picks. But, man, with only eight picks and one's worth three times as much as the other, and you can win it right there with that one pick. So I think you want to be really aggressive in the way you use it.
Yeah, I think I tend to lean towards Chris's analysis there. And last year, there's actually a horse running today. I only made one winning pick last year, but it was on a 30 to 1 early in the card. So, and I ran fifth. I was able to hang on to fifth and win that fifth seat with that horse, Hanovi, who's running tomorrow as well. So I guess to your point, Scott, you know, you're saying people are guessing. Maybe I'm thinking my guess is a little bit more informed than their guess. So that might be my edge. At least that's what I'm telling myself. But if Cask, I'll just give it out. If Cask is 10 to 1 or more, there's no question that's my triple bet, 100%.
And, you know, I'm looking at this race now and Cask, or I'm sorry, wait. Oh, I'm getting my horses mixed up. Yeah, okay. Yeah, if he were going to be that price and he's got the fastest figure in the race, yeah, I think it is kind of a fantasy that Cask will be that, you know, that high. The horse that I'm more interested in and I do think that I'm going to contradict myself and say that if Calculate were as high as 5 to 1 or higher, and he's 8 to 1 morning line, that I might just put it, I might send it in on that horse. Now I haven't watched replays or anything like that, but what I would do for sure, if I'm you, Michael, is I would have two entries in this contest because it's, you haven't qualified yet. Yeah. It's your track. you want to have two opportunities, you know, one swing and a miss, and at least still have a shot for later in the card. And you know, Cask, like you said, even if he's 5 to 1, that could be enough of an edge, getting your triple on that could win the contest for you. You know, that with some other winners.
If I pass him at any wins at 5 to 1, I will not be able to recover emotionally. I can promise you that. So, for the rest of the day, I'll just take the loss. Cause yeah. So it's an emotional, psychological thing, you know, that, you know, I almost have to play him. I really do. I mean, I've been waiting for him to run back actually, after seeing that last race,
he's going to open at 8 to 5, but
makes me pass. Right. I can pass him at 8 to 5 for sure.
Yeah. For PH Pod Karma, I think you definitely have to get two entries and we're going to route you home. This is your last chance basically to qualify this year.
Piling the pressure on.
I don't think it's pressure. I think, I mean, maybe you feel the pressure, but I feel like that we've got some pretty good karma. We've had guests like Tony Zoe did well in the contest. I don't think he won it, but he has certainly made a great run in the contest where the weekend that he was on here. So, you know, I think you should run with the karma. and have two entries in case you're wrong once.
I'm running with two, and I'm running with the karma.
All right.
Good luck. I think you're going to do it. We'll be rooting you on. Keep us posted on the leaderboard.
I will be.
On Twitter.
Yep.
As a matter of fact, give out your Twitter handle to the listeners, and we should probably do that again, Scott. We haven't done that in a while.
Yeah, I was going to ask Michael to do that. What is your Twitter handle so people can follow you on Twitter, Michael?
Yeah, it's at Beychok Racing, Beychok Racing. Now, if you don't like political tweets, you might want to follow and then mute, because I do have opinions. But I do have a few horse racing opinions on there as well.
And Chris, what's your Twitter handle?
I'm at Derby1592. 1592. At Derby1592.
All right. And I am Carsoni PH. So that will conclude show number 44 on the PH Pod. Many thanks, Michael, for being our guest today.
Thank you. I enjoyed it. I appreciate it.
All right. We'll thank Chris for being a stalwart on the show. Neither of us has missed one yet. Thanks most of all to our listeners. And thanks to our favorite band, the Brooklyn Boogaloo Blowout.
Cheers.